Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information, and I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 16, and right off the bat, I want to wish everybody a happy Labor Day, and I will apologize for any acoustic issues we have on this podcast. I've had an opportunity to spend the holiday weekend with family. I'm not in my apartment. I'm in a different location, so it might be a little bit of an echo. I don't have a headset. So, Dave, I apologize for any of that, but I hope you've had a great holiday. And good gracious, it has been a busy weekend for anybody associated with or following the NFL.
Sounds like you're at Carnegie Hall. you're on the main stage today. Yeah, hopefully this won't cause any issues in the recording, but it should be able to be heard anyway, regardless. Kevin Colbert's been a busy man this week, right? He had the extension that he signed, over the course of the last several days there, and then of course you get into the final round of roster cuts, a couple of deals that we're going to talk about, and a couple of free agent signings or a trade and signings we've already talked about or trade for McDonald and a signing of Hayden we've already discussed and all, but I don't even know where to start. This might end up being a 3-hour podcast today.
Yeah, you know what's interesting, Dave, and I'm going to try and take my voice level down a little bit just to make it a little easier on everybody, but I talked all preseason about how camp was really quiet. There wasn't a lot going on, but I have to say, at the end of the day, what we're looking at here on Monday with two roster moves still to be made is a very different roster in terms of what the expectations were for me 2 weeks ago than maybe any time during the 8 years we've been doing this podcast. There were obviously decisions made because of need. There weren't a bunch of decisions that had to be made because of injury. But the Steelers took a page really, and people aren't going to love saying it this way, but they took a page out of the New England Patriots playbook and went and wheeling and dealing. Look, we've seen the Patriots be far and away the most active team in the NFL in the trade market, and not many other people have followed that kind of that program. And the Steelers did it more roster wheeling and dealing here at the end than any time I can remember.
Yeah, definitely busy as far as like trades and all, I think, go. Over the years we've had the instances where some late roster shuffling, the Keshad Lyons, the DeMarcus Van Dykes, the Antoine Blakes, the Cody Wallaces, all coming in, late, where it was, unexpected, bottom of the roster kind of shuffling. But yeah, this year, I think when you look back at those kind of names and all, not guys that you think, oh my, those kind of guys can contribute, significantly type of things. And we've definitely have seen over the course of this last week where, it's not just, it's not the bottom end of the roster that's being juggling here for sure. So yeah, Kevin Colbert's been a busy man, and yeah, basically a part of your statement is correct there when it comes to trades and more high impact guys.
So, we didn't get a chance to talk on Friday. Obviously, a lot went down after the Carolina game. And Joe Hayden comes in, and we've seen what's happened since then. And the fallout from Hayden, obviously, the question was, is it going to be Ross Cockrell? Is it going to be, it looked like Cody Sensabaugh had passed Cockrell maybe, in that third week of the preseason. And then, would there be an outside chance that William Gay would be the guy? So, first of all, just to reiterate, I'm sure what Dave and Alex talked about on Friday, it still amazes me that some of the national media guys, smart guys, were talking about the 3-year, $27 million deal with Joe Hayden and saying, that's a lot of money for Joe Hayden. And as Dave has pointed out, I'm sure, effectively we're talking about the signing bonus and the first-year base. And there was an offset in the Cleveland deal where anything up to $4 million they wouldn't have to pay. So there's a little bit of relief for them, but the majority of the money was in the signing bonus. And then, as you pointed out, Dave, before we got on air, there's $1 million roster bonus in March of next year, and then $9 and $10 million. So the Steelers are really on the hook for $7 million this year, and then they'll make a decision. And as I said, the best thing for the Steelers, for Joe Haden, and for Steeler fans would be that Joe Haden makes all $27 million, because that would mean you've got 2013 and 2014 Joe Haden back.
Absolutely. And real quick, housekeeping on that Browns. The Browns are off the hook altogether when it comes to that. Because
the Steelers, because he didn't go through waivers, right?
No, it came down to, he had to make $4 million more than $4 million this year, and he did. He's getting $7 million.
Oh, I thought it was just the base salary. They could work around it on the signing bonus. So it all counts to this year.
Right. They're off the hook of what they owe Joe Haden. Now the Steelers obviously have to pay Joe Haden, the $7 million this year. But yeah, you're right. Hey, it's going to be a good problem to have. If we're sitting here in February saying, man, I wonder if the Steelers are going to pay Joe Haden that $1 million roster bonus. If we're even contemplating that, it's probably been a good season. But on the flip side, if he's not very effective, has injuries, concerns, or whatnot, you just cut him loose, and there's no repercussions moving forward related to the deal. So essentially, on paper, it's a 1 year, $7 million contract, and yeah, he can earn the other $20 million as long as he plays well, in each of these next 2 years. But we'll see, something needed to be done. I don't think anybody listening to this podcast would argue that something probably needed to be done with that secondary, and now we'll wait and see what version of Joe Haden we have. And as I keep going back to all the time, David, good pass rush out of four guys will make a lot of people look good. And if you're getting it for good pass rush out of four this year, out of your front four, you'll really probably make Joe Haden look good.
Yeah, exactly. And it'll be interesting because we've talked about the Steelers and the type of thing they play. Look, they are going to change. They're not going to change who they are. They're not all of a sudden going to play bump and run on both sides all the time. But they obviously want to have the option to be able to diversify their coverage schemes more than they have in the past. And Haden can do that. And obviously, Artie was drafted because he can do that. And that'll give them more of an option. Dave, were you at all surprised that there was a market for Ross Cockrell? I mean, look, the Steelers are getting a conditional draft choice. If Ross Cockrell doesn't finish the season on the New York Giants 53-man roster, the Steelers may get nothing. So they're not going to get – they didn't get a lot for Ross Cockrell. But they got a piece of – they got an IOU that could be turn into a seventh-round pick or something like that. Were you surprised that that somebody wanted Ross Cockrell and was willing to at least give – at least something so that he didn't have to go through the waiver process?
Yes and no. More to the yes, I was surprised aspect, because we're talking about a guy that was on that's still on a 1 year restricted tender. So when the Giants traded for that, they got the contract that comes along with that. So
yep.
$1.7 million. Is that his worth? Is he worth less than that? He's obviously not worth more than that. But on the flip side, let's say Ross Cockrell turns around and has a great season. It's going to end up being a one-year rental for the Giants. Will Ross Cockrell even last the season on the Giants roster? So we don't know what the conditions are of that pick, other than it says conditional seventh-round draft pick. And for Kevin Colbert to get anything for a player that a few hours later was going to just be cut. Nita, as Hines Ward said, take your hat off and hand it to him.
Right. So that's what. Okay. So let's talk about the other thing that happened that day. And we've had this massive shuffling of the Steelers' sixth round pick. And we'll go through the lineage history of this a little bit later when we get into the Wilcox deal. But you and I sat here and talked forever about what was going to happen. And I was very much have been, from the end of last year till, this week, very much in Sammy Coates' corner as a guy who was guaranteed to make the roster. I was not buying into the Justin Hunter thing. We saw good things out of Justin Hunter in camp. And then all of a sudden, Justin Hunter has a very good week 4. Now, I don't know how significant this is, but Jim Wexel is a guy who I think is a good Steelers beat writer. He goes to every practice. He pays attention. He talks to people. And he has his own opinions. I don't always agree with his opinions, but I think he just does his job well. And Jim Wexel is of the view that Ben Roethlisberger really wanted Justin Hunter on this team. So he has a good week for Dave, and the Steelers get back the pick they gave up for Justin Gilbert to move Sammy Coates. What was your initial reaction when you saw the news of the deal?
Well, I go back to what Alex and I had mentioned on the show on Friday, wondering if Mike Tomlin was going to find a way to get one of his Virginia Beach boys on the 53-man roster. You know, Justin Hunter's from that Virginia Beach, Virginia area, and Mike Tomlin's always had, you know, a liking for kids that come out of that area. Obviously, he's probably known Justin Hunter for a long time, even before, or he obviously did know Justin Hunter a long time before he even came to the Steelers and all the Steelers. I remember having some interest in Hunter way back prior to that draft that year. And, you know, the whole two dogs, one bone thing from a few weeks ago with Hunter and Coates, it led you really to believe that it really was going to be a situation where it was going to be maybe one of those two making the roster, with Darius Heyward-Bey, making it as a six, as a special teams contributor there. I had, I did personally, I wasn't going to let Hunter onto my 53-man roster just because of that last game. Now, he did have a great start to training camp and all, good in the red zone, but he kind of tailed off. He had an injury there. He missed some time during the preseason there. But he had the touchdown in the game. What was it, against the Colts, the short red zone touchdown?
It was, yep.
And then, of course, he had the long touchdown pass in that, where he just blew by the guy in the preseason finale, and Dobbs threw him a dime there as well, too. I'm surprised that they traded Sammy Coates to the Cleveland Browns.
Did the Steelers give up too early on Sammy Coates?
You know, I can't help but keep going back to what Kevin Colbert said after Sammy Coates' rookie season, I think the draft that followed that, and then on into the opening of training camp a year ago, saying that Sammy needs to develop as a route runner. More than anything else, he needs to become a better route runner. Well, you know, last season opened up, and we saw what Sammy Coates did in college, and that stretched the field deep, those long explosive plays. I've got a post somewhere up on the site, something about, you know, I forget how many college touchdowns he scored, but like 90% of them were like 30 yards or longer,
right.
Type of deal. So, you know, he is a big play receiver, but have we seen, has he done enough outside of that? Now, the Steelers obviously have had their share of one-trick ponies, throughout the year, and there's nothing wrong with being a one-trick pony. I just think that they thought that maybe he could possibly become a little bit more than that, maybe a guy they could eventually work, as maybe a slot option as well, too. And I don't think he ever became that. Obviously, the injury last year, coming back from that, he just didn't seem to have the same confidence level. It showed in his playing time decreasing, and he basically became a special teams demon, if you will, other than that. So, we'll see. David, do you expect Sammy Coates to blow up in Cleveland?
You know, it's a fascinating thing, because it's really, you're so spot on about the route running. And Sammy, in those, he's averaging, insane numbers, like, 30, 40 yards a catch. 5 weeks in, he's right up there with league leaders in yards, with 400 plus yards. But he never could work the middle of the field. In that Jets game where he broke his fingers, where he caught a bunch of passes and he dropped a bunch of passes, he dropped one, a crossing pattern at the goal line, just a short one that he'd never have an easier touchdown than that. And then you go to the Miami game, and this is when thing. I think this is when things started, and people will remember Ben got hurt in that game. And they tried to work. You know, Ben threw an interception. He tried to work on the inside with him, and I think he lost complete confidence in him because it was clear that coach didn't run the right route. And I think the numbers were, and I don't have this. I just remember talking about it a bunch of times on the podcast last year. When Landry Jones started against New England, Sammy Coates caught one ball in that game. And from before that, when before Ben got hurt, then Ben came back, I think Sammy Coates might have been targeted somewhere between 14 and 18 times without catching a pass. And in today's NFL, I mean, that's probably some kind of record for that many targets without catching a pass because he couldn't work the middle of the field. And that's what it came down to. And when you have, you know, when you've got Martavis back now fully reinstated and ready to go, and you've drafted Juju, you've got, you know, Juju can do a lot of different things in terms of versatility for you. We know what Eli's going to do. It's just, and Darius Hayward-Bay can run the go route and stretch the field if you need him out there as a fourth receiver to do that. So it's, you know, I don't know. I wish the best for Sammy Coates. I really thought we were going to see amazing things out of him last year, and it didn't happen. But one of the things, and I go back to this, and this is one of the things we always thought, you know, people know that I've been a huge Manny Sanders fan because I think he was a very intelligent receiver. We knew Marcus Wheaton was a very intelligent receiver and supposed to be a great route runner, and it just never worked out for Marcus Wheaton in Pittsburgh. Sammy was the opposite. Sammy was more the Martavis Bryant mold, the incredibly gifted receiver who maybe wasn't the smartest guy, didn't always pick up the playbook. And you hope those guys, they come in and they're in their third year and they learn that stuff and the light bulb clicks, but it never did for Sammy.
And, you know, remember, too, with Sammy, if you threw that ball out in front of him and he was running by his guy, no, usually no problem, except maybe the game against Baltimore where that one went off his hands in the end zone there. But that was post his injury as well, too. But later on in the season, how many times do we see, look, Ben Roethlisberger's not perfect. He underthrows a lot of deep balls.
Yes. But Sammy didn't fight for the ball.
Right. We don't see him do a good job of adjusting to ball in flight and working back and contesting, at least giving himself some good chances at the football. Now, look, I'm not putting this all on Sammy because just as we've said, how many times have we seen Ben Roethlisberger put it up there and it just not get up there? But, you know, I have remarked, I think I wrote about it a couple times, I think maybe in the game. Was it against the Colts or somebody thinking, saying, man, I'd like to see Sammy kind of fight back in those situations. And I think a lot of commenters went after me saying, well, that, you know, Ben wouldn't underthrow the ball like that. Well, yeah, it's true, but he did.
So he's still part of the job.
Right. I think a lot went into this. And look, I mean, let's make no mistake about it. The Steelers have a nice batch of wide receivers to choose from. You can only keep so many. Some will say they should have cut Darius Hayward-Bey and kept Sammy Coates. I definitely can understand that argument. But on the flip side, you know, if you kept six, are you going to dress all six anyway? And the situation now with the Steelers, yes, they have six. Hunter and DHB are on this roster, and there might be a good chance that a guy like Juju does not dress for the first 1 or 2 weeks.
But I agree with that, by the way.
I'm not saying that's going to happen. It wouldn't be surprising due to the time that he's missed during training camp. And boy, I can see the fan base getting irate when Juju shows up as a healthy scratch in weeks 1 and 2. But remember what they did with Martavis too. And now they might have let him go a little bit too long during his rookie year. But you know, he spent what, the first 5-6 weeks on the inactive list. Martavis did. And then boy, when he had that, what was it, the coming out party against? I think it was Houston that year. Boy, he looked, you're thinking to yourself, why the hell was this guy even inactive?
But I think it was actually like week 10, right? When he blew up.
Yeah. Something like that. 8, 9, 10, something along those lines. So I think a guy like Hunter, can give you, you know, what you need in the meantime. Obviously, insurance in case injury or whatnot for Martavis. Justin Hunter is, and you want to talk about a reason Ben might like Justin Hunter. He's like 6'4", good in the red zone as well. So, yeah, I think all that kind of jives and, you know, throw in the fact that he's a Virginia Beach, Virginia boy. You know, maybe this went the way it did. In short, you know, I don't think they gave up on Sammy Coates too soon. I think, if anything, a change of scenery is maybe what might get him off to the right track. But I don't see him becoming anything more than what he's been, and that's you go deep.
So we talked from the beginning of camp about 5, 6, 7 receivers. I think we wrote off Kobe Hamilton and DeMarcus Ayers. We were correct in that. Hamilton, you know, we'll see where he ends up at the end of the day. DeMarcus Ayers, very interesting. One of the beat writers covering the Steelers, one of the younger guys, spent a lot of time, I think, over the past week dealing with agents and players who were going to be likely practice squad candidates. And what Ayers or Ayers' agent told him was that if he didn't make the 53, he was not going to sign with the Steelers on the practice squad. And boy, that turned out to be prophetic. As he signs with the Patriots today on their practice squad, the Steelers made him an offer. He turned it down. Dave, it's hard for me to, you know, feel anything, you know, any animosity to DeMarcus Ayers. He looks at it and says, you know, this is a stacked receiver group. You know, where am I going to get playing time? They've got Tucker, who was, became kind of a late camp darling for a lot of people, who was on a practice squad last year. You probably knew he was going to stick around. He wasn't anybody we really considered for the 53. And he signs for the practice squad. I think DeMarcus Ayers actually probably made a good decision for DeMarcus Ayers.
Yeah, and I know a lot of the fan base is mad and animosity, especially on where he ended up with the Patriots and all, but I think you hit on a lot of good points there. I mean, buried on the depth chart, you know, probably better slot receiver fit. And if that's the case, and if the Steelers view him that way and most other teams view him that way, he would be 3 deep behind guys like Eli Rogers, Juju Smith, you know, that kind of thing. So I think he looked at the landscape of the situation and said, man, what's the odds of me? And make no mistake, if the Steelers had wouldn't have suffered the kind of injuries and had the problem with Martavis last year that they had, Ayers would have.
He never would have seen the field.
Right, he would have been on the practice squad all year, and he spent almost all the season on the practice squad. And yeah, we got to see him in 2 games, and yes, he had a good showing late against Baltimore, and then of course the regular season finale against Cleveland. But to be quite honest with you, highlights aside, I'm not sure all of us really know who DeMarcus Ayers, the player, is right now, the NFL version. Sure, we've seen enough
and
of
him. We said from the beginning of camp, we agreed his easiest avenue to make this club was going to be take a couple punt returns early in camp back for touchdowns and make them think about having you be the number one return guy. You've shown some receiver chops, but if you can get that special team spot, then they can keep you can be the sixth receiver if you're going to be the return guy. And unfortunately, him missing a lot of camp just, again, killed his chances. You know, the only guy who killed his chances more than him was Sanquest Golson. But it really didn't help Ayers, even though, you know, he did show something in the last game, in the punt return game. And that's probably, you know, you think with Julian Edelman out in New England, I can't imagine Philip Dorsett's going to end up being their punt return guy. So maybe if there's a roster spot open, that's Ayers' avenue to get to the 53 in New England.
And don't forget about this, too. A key factor I think a lot of people missing with New England here, and it might lead to a reason why Belichick signed Ayers to the practice squad. Cyrus Jones suffered an injury, did he not, with the Patriots?
I did not see that, but yeah, okay.
And he was their punt returner, although one that sometimes you wondered if he's going to put the church's money on the ground and all. But Cyrus Jones is on IR now, and he was going to be their their punt returner again this year. So now Belichick has heirs; he can evaluate him. What's the first thing, Dan? You know, when DeMarcus Ayers was drafted, who came out and talked about him?
Yeah, we talk about it all the time. It was Danny came out and talked about him as number one guy on our board as a return guy. And you know, they didn't give him a huge chance last year in any kind of real opportunity. And him missing camp, we never saw that. But it was Danny came out to talk about him.
So, you know, if Danny is right and DeMarcus Ayers was the top, you know, they had him top rated returner in that draft class last year. You know, one would think that Belichick might have had him up there roughly as well too. So, you know, maybe as a member of the practice squad, Belichick gets a couple of weeks to look at him, and you know, who knows what's going to happen on the rest of the roster in the meantime there. So, yeah, overall, I mean, DeMarcus Ayers might have made the best decision, especially if he. Now, here's the thing where he did really hurt himself, and that's missing those first three preseason games, because had he shown more as maybe a wide receiver and a punt returner, even if he didn't make the Steelers' 53-man roster, maybe there's a good chance he gets claimed off waivers and is on another 53-man roster right now. But it is what it is. You know, I understand people getting upset. A draft pick goes out the door, unlikely to return, but you know, it's part of the business, and I don't hate him for it.
So, Dave, let's stay on the offense and now talk about kind of cut down day on Saturday, because we're talking about what happened with the two trades kind of leading into that. And the quarterback position was as expected. Now, we've talked about what happened at wide receiver, and that went more or less as expected. After we talk about the trade with Coates. Okay, so the rest of it falls out the way we thought about. So the rest of it was interesting. There were roster decisions to be made at all three positions. We've been talking about it all camp. I've been flat out wrong about this. I thought Nile Davis was pretty much assured to make the team. We talk about how when the Steelers sign guys as free agents in the market, not undrafted free agents, outright free agents to 1 or 2 year deals, we generally see them almost universally make the team. And Miles Davis, he didn't have a free pass. The Steelers drafted James Conner, and you knew he was going to make the roster. And Fitz Toussaint was coming back. But we saw what happened with Terrell Watson coming in to make this team. And you know, I didn't give it a lot of credence. So I'm wrong about it. Kudos to Mike and Kevin, because I tweeted this earlier in the week, and I've said it many times. Whatever you think of Mike and Kevin, the one thing is, they try to put the best 53 together, and it's very difficult for any guy, almost on any team, to win a job in training camp. And we saw three guys do it this year in Mike Hilton, in Terrell Watson, and in, you know, we're going to get to Filer, who was one of Dave's darlings here in the second half of preseason, kind of, you know, really kind of pounding the table for him. But they went with Watson, Dave, and Davis and Fitz get cut. I don't have any problem with it. Let me ask you a couple things. One is, if Le'Veon Bell needs a blow against the Cleveland Browns, who goes in and gets the rock for the series? Who gets the playing time this week?
James Conner.
Okay. Has he shown enough? Has he gotten enough reps in camp and comfort level that he knows what he's supposed to do in pass blocking and receiving to feel like, you know, he's the guy?
I don't have the answer for that, but he's the first one. He's the first one I'm sending in there.
Were you at all surprised? Not that we didn't see good things from Watson. And for those who don't know, just to give you a little background, 2015 out of Azusa Pacific, the Steelers are his fourth team. He was with the Bengals. And the Steelers are his third AFC North team. He was with the Bengals, the Broncos, and the Browns. So when Hugh Jackson left Cincinnati and went to Cleveland, he knew of him, and he was there with them. So look, this is a guy who hasn't made it around some stops that we're familiar with. You know, some decent running games in all places, particularly a good running game in Denver. Cleveland's had a couple capable guys, and the Bengals, we know the guys that they've had. So it wasn't an easy road for him. But this was not a guy coming into camp that we were paying any attention to until late. And he obviously, you know, he earned it with his play.
He absolutely did, and it was good. If you go back to 2015 during the preseason, he was the third. He was the third leading. Let me see if that was AFC or NFL. He was the 11th leading preseason rusher in 2015, and the third top rusher during the preseason in the AFC in 2015 with the Bengals. He had 25 carries for 130 yards, averaged 5.2 yards per carry. Look, you go back.
And it's important to remember, you know, that was Geo's second year, and they had just drafted Hill, right?
I'm trying to remember how those years meshed
so
together.
So Geo was Le'Veon's year, so he had come out the year before, and then they went and got the big back of Jeremy Hill out of LSU. And so, you know, it's a tough road for him right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, in fact, even, you know, the preseason just recently, Watson didn't get carries in what was it, the third game? Was it against the Colts or the Falcons?
Yeah, he didn't play. That was the Nile Davis show.
Right, and Tomlin said, you know, it's no reflection on anybody else. I just wanted to get, you know, because Fitz Toussaint had been given work in the opener against the Giants, and then
James Conner got all the second game.
Yeah, and you know, from there on out, and I wrote before the Panthers game, boy, it sure would be nice to Watson's done enough that I would like to see him with whatever first team is out there, and lo and behold, that happened, and I was glad to see it. Nile Davis obviously got the second half, bulk of the second half work there. You need guys that can run up the middle and get you 4, 5, 6, 7 yards.
The Steelers kept the three most interesting running backs. We agree on that?
Absolutely, they did. Look, people said, man, you're biased against Nile Davis. This whole, yeah, I'm biased. I'm biased against his damn tape. All right, you got me. You go back to some of my tweets from way back July, end of June there. I think Nile Davis better return a lot of damn kicks, for some yardage. And also one other tweet I said, this year's Kevin Barlow. It was nothing special to me, David, during the preseason with Nile Davis. And yeah, you could say the same thing about Fitz Toussaint. He really didn't do much. And then, of course, he didn't help his causes getting that injury in the third game and then missing the fourth game as well, too, there. So I understand what they did. And plus, now you got a guy in Watson that, God forbid, that you need to shuffle back and forth, you know, to the practice squad or something along those lines. You can do that as well, too. And who knows? This guy might even be returning kickoffs for you in week one as well, too. So I think, it's good to see Tomlin, you know, preaches all the time that these guys should not look at the depth chart. They should not read what's written about them. Because it means nothing. Things happen during camp. You can outperform a guy. Injuries happen. And quite honest with you, before the preseason started, really nobody was giving Watson any chance whatsoever. We were either – our third running back was either going to be Nile Davis or Fitzgerald Toussaint. That was it, end of story. And it did not play out that way.
Yeah, and I had even said, before all this roster machinations went down, that I thought they might keep four running backs and they'd keep them both. And that was, I don't know if that's damning with faint praise. I just felt like because of what I talked about free agent signings, Nile Davis was going to be the kick return guy. And I think it was more, I felt like Mike Tomlin was enamored with Fitz Toussaint. Fitz Toussaint's just a guy. I mean, he's the epitome of a Jag. And look, Steelers made the decision because of the rules. They were able to get him to the practice squad. So good for him. He's got, he's going to be part of the group. And, we've seen the injuries that James Conner suffered during his career. We've seen the injuries and issues that Le'Veon Bell's had during his career. So, it's not going to surprise anybody if Fitz Toussaint at some point during the season's on the 53-man roster. It's just, for neither guy, there was much upside. I mean, I was higher on Nile Davis than you were. You turned out to be spot on this the whole way. So that's the running back situation with three and with Rosie Nix. No surprise. Rosie Nix was never any question about him making this roster. So then, Dave, the tight end situation, we talked on Wednesday a week ago. about the acquisition of Vance McDonald and him being kind of 1B and who was going to be at risk here. And, you know, this is one where I felt like I've been right on this one. I didn't understand them re-signing David Johnson. I didn't even more so understand the two-year deal of re-signing David Johnson. Yes, he is. He brings a little bit of a different skill set, and that he is the best inline blocker of the group. But it doesn't mean he's an outstanding inline blocker. He's the best of the group. But with Rosie Nix and with Chris Hubbard, the Steelers, I think, surprised a lot of people by cutting David Johnson. And I know some people thought it was going to be, you know, Xavier Grimble was going to be the guy to go. I just think there's more upside, and apparently Matt Spaeth and a few other people feel like there's real upside blocking potential on Xavier Grimble to be, you know, to be an elite's probably too strong a word, but to be a very good tight end. So that's what I've always been banking on, that he wouldn't be the cut because the upside of him is higher than any of the three other guys that they had. So we knew Vance was staying. We figured, as you pointed out, you could probably make a case for cutting any of the other three. Jesse stays. David Johnson just goes 1 to 10 level of surprise.
And, 8 or 9. I was surprised. I got to be honest. I've had David Johnson written in pen for a while, and I think a lot of that has to do with tooth. You know, he's a great option. Should something happen to Roosevelt Nix during a game, you know, a good fullback to put back there. Now, is David Johnson absolutely a great asset on special teams? No, not the way he was, you know, in his earlier days, especially the first stint with the Steelers there. But even so, I was surprised that David Johnson was on that list. I mean, no two ways about it.
Okay, so. How do you feel about the tight end group now going into the season? Did Vance McDonald kind of assuage some of the concerns about the position group in your mind?
Yeah, from an aspect, I think you can stretch the field now in certain instances and in certain areas that you were unsure if you could do with a guy like Xavier Grimble. And I think you can disguise it a little bit more now with a guy like Vance McDonald as well, too. You know, because he's, you know, a decent inline blocker as well. So, yeah, I mean, look, this group is better than it was a couple of weeks ago. Now, is it extremely better? I mean, is it, do you look at these three and say, boy, this, you know, Steelers might have the best tight end trio in the league? No, you're probably not going that far. But as the tape shows with McDonald, he can do some things that you signed Ladarius Green to do, you know,
yes.
And all. Now, is he that explosive and all? No, but I mean, he's got quite a few 20-yard catches. And there's one thing that the Steelers have lacked over the years, even dating back with Heath Miller, was being able to get tight ends down the middle of the field for 20, 25, 40-yard plays. And at least Vance McDonald, I think, now gives you that opportunity. Xavier Grimble can too. But you know, you got to hold on to the football, you know? So, I mean, it was either with you, Alex, or you, you know, on one of these recent podcasts, there's no way that you can't like the deal for Vance McDonald, because.
Yeah. And I would say that about all three of the deals, the trades the Steelers did, I don't see an argument against any of them. So let's go. You know, we've seen, and we have to go somewhat on history with Mike Tomlin, 8 offensive linemen has been the norm. We felt there were going to be, you know, squeezes at some other positions, and there just wasn't room for a 9th guy. I saw some guys here late last week, some of the beat writers actually suggesting the Steelers might cut Gerald Hawkins, who hasn't done much in this camp, looked very good last year before getting injured. And then obviously spending the season on the IR, I never felt like, and look, I'm not that close to it this year, but I never felt like Hawkins' spot was in jeopardy. But all of a sudden, some of the guys who were there every day thought there was a possibility of that. And Dave, you saw it from the get-go on the tape with Filer, what he was doing. And this guy, just again, 330 pounds, a big physical guy playing inside, just shows the level of importance. And with Ramon Foster's contract situation, the way the Steelers are set up, you know, maybe this is, you know, the heir apparent. You got on this one pretty early. Neither of us thought they would keep 9, but they did. We talked about Mihalik more than Filer coming into camp. Mihailuk goes back. The one guy who did get claimed, he goes back to the Lions, who had taken him, signed him, and then eventually signed him to the practice squad last year, where the Steelers signed him back during the season. So he's gone back and forth. He goes to the Lions, and the Steelers do keep nine. I have to tell you, that surprised me.
Well, I mean, first and foremost, you know, Alex Kozorov, you know, his early camp reports and all. Obviously, I wasn't there, so that's all I had to go on. But I knew enough stemming from that this should probably be a guy that we watch during the preseason. And, you know, not perfect by any stretch of imagination. He needs some work on his pass protection and on those stunts and all, and you know, knowing when to pass off and all. But I mean, on the move and as a run blocker, really hard at both spots, right and left guard. Hard not to admire what he did. He made a strong case. Now, he was not on my 53-man roster, but I made sure to write on there. I really would like to find a way to keep nine. I just couldn't to make my numbers working on. I said, well, maybe there's a way the Steelers can trade him or something along those lines, but not disappointed in the least to see him kept. And I think he's going to be exclusive rights free agent after the year is over, so he'll obviously, assuming he stays on the roster all year, will be easy to keep. And then another year past that is, you know, moving way on down the line, a lot of ifs, ands, and buts. But as a restricted free agent, you'll be able to keep him that way as well too. So for all we know, maybe we have found our next, depending on what happens to B.J. Finney, because let me face the facts here. B.J. Finney put up some good tape as a left guard last year, and now you have a little bit of insurance on top of that with a guy like Filer. Now, in the meantime, if you're going to keep nine, you're definitely not going to dress all nine on game day, so I suspect that Filer and Gerald Hawkins will be inactive, right? There'll be two of your inactives right out of shoot, but not disappointed. Filer earned a roster spot.
Okay, so that's the offensive side of the ball. Let's do the special teams. We know the punter and the kicker, Steelers may have as good a tandem as there is in the league, probably a little bit underappreciated league-wide because they haven't been around that long, but I think people realize how good those two guys are. The Steelers make the decision to go with Cameron Kennedy over Holba, who was their sixth-round pick, which raised a lot of eyebrows. The Steelers got mocked by their own fans for taking a long snapper with the sixth-round pick. Kennedy, the word on him is that he was able to snap with a little bit more velocity. For those who don't know the backstory on him, look, he was with the Arizona Cardinals last year, and you remember the Cardinals had some problems early in the kicking game. Their Cannizzaro misses that field goal on the opening weekend against the Patriots. I think it was week one or week two when Garoppolo was playing. They should have won that game. He had a bad snap or two, but redemption for him. He comes into camp again. When Greg Warren didn't pass his physical in the spring, we all basically handed Holba the job. Because, you know, they got a guy with a draft pick, and this was his job to lose, and he lost it. He got beat out, and Kennedy's the guy. And, you know, hopefully this is not a position – you know, hopefully we don't bring up Kennedy again, you know, until about December, because there's not a lot to talk about. It's a position where you don't ever want to be noticed, because the only time you notice are when things go wrong. But, again, a little bit of a surprise there that Holba doesn't get the job.
Yeah, and I guess we should learn from the fact that the Steelers kept both those guys all the way through the whole thing. You know, when maybe they could have used a roster spot to go elsewhere for, you know, a DB or whatnot, you know, as an extra body. They kept both those going into the final preseason game. That alone should probably tell you enough that there was some competition there. And I don't think Holba helped himself with that high snap a couple of weeks ago that led to the miss of the Boswell. It was an extra point, I think. You know, look, maybe Holba read his own press clippings as well too, right? You know, thinking that you know, hey, they drafted me, they're not going to cut me. But lo and behold, Cameron Kennedy is the guy, and Holba's out on the street right now. So there you go.
Okay, so we go to the defensive side of the ball here, and the question was going to be five or six defensive linemen. Again, a bit of a surprise here. We saw, you know, we know that Hooks kind of made a late push in the preseason to be a guy. Not necessarily, I don't think anybody had him making the 53, but a push to the practice squad. This was a job that Johnny Maxey, who came on late, you know, LT Walton came on late last year and really did some nice things and earned his spot on this roster last year. So he was pretty much a lock coming into camp, we felt like. But Maxey was a guy who got an opportunity late as well. And I thought, you know, showed well enough for himself that he was, I thought his worst case scenario was to get to the practice squad, and his best case scenario was to make the 53, and just didn't do anything in camp to get anybody's attention. And whatever you want to say about Big Dan, there are moments when he's flashed, and surprisingly with his size, you know, you would expect him to flash more in the run game than in the pass, you know, rushing the passer. But Dan has shown that he may not always get to the passer, but he can move his guy out of the position that the guy wants to be in. Dan's on the 53 today. I don't think we'll see Dan McCullers on the roster when they play the Cleveland Browns. But as of now, Dave, there's six defensive linemen, and it's Dan McCullers.
Yeah, I was surprised by that. Guy ran, you know, back of the end of the lines all through training camp, according to Alex, and late snaps in preseason games. Now, to his credit, and you know, made sure to try to point it out once or twice after those games, he would drive his – it's the same old stuff we've seen with Dan McCullers. He'll drive his man, you know, occasionally back, you know, 15 yards off the ball,
like
the guy owes him some money or something. But he just can't get unstuck. Now, he has made a few run stops during his career, yes, and all. Just wildly inconsistent. And I guess more than anything, and here's the thing, I mean, as a sixth defensive lineman, he's not even, you know, people talking about, well, you can keep him, you can put him in there on the goal line packages and all. That's all fine and good, but the odds of the Steelers dressing all six defensive linemen during the game are very, very slim. You know, the only way that's going to happen is usually if injuries elsewhere dictate that, you know, your healthy bodies at that position outnumber the guys that you need on the inactive list there. So I'm with you. I'm not convinced Dan's going to stay on the rust on the 53 all year long here, but he's made it initially. We'll have to see how these last kind of shuffling the spots go. But for now, he's on there, and they could have just as easily kept a guy like Hooks or Maxey and used them as shuffling material as well, too. So I think they view McCullers as the better player than the two. That's, you know, I think you can't look at it any way other than that.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, Dan's a nose, he's a pure nose. He is, you know, he's in the Casey Hampton mold. He's a much taller guy than Casey. But, I mean, look, Javon Hargrave has a chance to be an elite guy here down the road. And Javon Hargrave, I think, can line up in some different technique spots on the defensive line. Dan's going to be that pure guy. So he's here now, and again, it's not going to surprise me if he's not here Sunday. But it, you know, it says something for him that he made it through this cut. So we go to the linebackers and the defensive backs. And if you're listening to this podcast here on Monday night or on Tuesday, you know, these roster machinations are ongoing. And Le'Veon Bell, you know, he signed his franchise tender, but the Steelers don't have to count him against the 53 until he's activated. Of course, Mike's going to activate him for the game on Sunday. So sometime I would assume it will be Thursday or Friday. Le'Veon Bell will be on this roster. But for this moment in time, we are talking about a 55-man roster, not a 53-man roster. And the Steelers made a move today. A bit of a surprising move that they waived Jordan Dangerfield injured. And this was the move, Dave, let me make sure I get this right. They re-signed Stevie Johnson. So Stevie was a guy who I think we all thought if it's nine linebackers, Stevie's number 10, he's going to be the odd guy out. As you pointed out, they did this last year, the exact same thing. The handshake will be back to you in a couple days. You know, stay by the phone. So Stevie comes back and Jordan Dangerfield gets moved off the roster.
Yeah, and there was that ankle injury that a few days ago after that game against the Panthers described by, I think it was Jacob Klinger, I think, was the one that had it as a mild ankle sprain. Well, mild isn't mild enough, evidently, because out he goes waived injured. And as you said, Steven Johnson brought back. That could be a special team for special team swap if you want to look at it that way. However, J.J. Wilcox can play on special teams. We haven't even talked about him yet. We'll probably close with him. But Cameron Sutton, he had to be on the 53 in order to make it to IR. You could kind of see the writing on the wall with that one coming. Now, he's got to miss the first 8 weeks of the season. He can resume practicing after the first 6 weeks, but can't play until after missing the first 8 weeks there. Unfortunate, but he re-injured that hamstring that he'd injured during training camp. Gives him a time to get fully healthy, but at the same time, that train's going to get on out of the station without him, as Mike Tomlin likes to say there. So how safe is Stevie Johnson going forward? I don't know. Jordan Dangerfield's probably a very upset individual right now, because you have to wonder if Jordan Dangerfield doesn't hurt his ankle in that game against Carolina, do the Steelers even trade for a guy like J.J. Wilcox, at that point?
Yeah, it's very interesting, because Robert Golden's preseason was as bad as anybody's on this roster who you expect to, potentially be a contributor. Now, Robert Golden, everybody looks at as the special teams captain. He's been excellent in that role. That's the role you want.
By the way, breaking news, he was not named special. They did not name a special teams captain today. So I don't know what you should read into that, but
that means Robert Golden shouldn't sleep all that soundly. Is it Cam and Ben? I didn't see this.
It is Cam and Ben.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so they've got co-captains. So that is an interesting piece of news there, and you should read something into that. And so this all plays together. The other nine linebackers we're not even going to talk about today. We'll get into that during the week, but it's just as expected. So that position group went exactly as expected. So Stevie comes on the roster. Then, okay, so the machinations were Hayden comes in, Cockrell gets moved. We opened the show talking about that. The rest of it's kind of as we thought. Cody Sensabaugh, Liam Gay. So it came down to the decision here when they were doing things. And, Dave, I think the guy that we should highlight in this defensive backfield group, of course, Sanquez Golson, never saw it, wasn't invited to be on the practice squad. I hope he gets a chance to do something somewhere down the road here. But it's the Brian Allen situation. Another guy drafted in the fifth round. We know the Steelers' history going back to Terry Hawthorne. And, we can go through guys, defensive backs. You can go to Dorian Grant, who was a fourth-round pick. We've got guys before that. We can name them all for you. But Brian Allen, the way his camp was described to me most recently, was a guy the Steelers took a bit of a flyer on, 6'3", a gifted guy, learning the position, who it was the way it was described was who did nothing wrong in camp. He didn't shine, but he did nothing wrong, and the Steelers obviously still like that upside potential.
Plus, he can play on special teams. Hallelujah.
Right. And so, again, we talk about surprises, and I felt like this camp was going along, and there were no surprises, and this was going to be as vanilla as it gets, and it turns out it wasn't vanilla at all. I figured Allen was going to the practice squad. Do you like it?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you can keep, the more defensive backs, the better. Now, I had Allen obviously going to the practice squad, pending something happening with Cameron Sutton. It wasn't hard to read the writing on the wall that Cameron Sutton might be going to IR, and then you'd have to make another move from there. Maybe you bring Brian Allen back at that time or something along those lines. But I know a lot of our listeners are glad that you didn't even have to expose Brian Allen to waivers. So now he's on the roster. It's hard. Now that Cameron Sutton has been moved to IR, it's going to give, it's a good chance that Brian Allen is going to stick around a little while as your sixth defensive back. Right, because look, we thought they'd keep six in total anyway.
Six corner, right?
I mean, six. What did I say?
Defensive Defensive back.
Six corners in total. And you know, they went, they had to go through the process of keeping Sutton on the 53 first before sending him to IR. But now here we are with six cornerbacks on the 53-man roster, with Brian Allen being number six. And it'll be a good problem to have, hopefully, later on in the season when Sutton's ready to go. Then maybe you think about, hey, is Brian Allen progressed enough where we consider him depth on the outside, that maybe when we bring Sutton back, maybe Mike Hilton becomes the odd man out.
Or William Gay. So we look at this now, Dave, and the situation here, I have to say I'm still a bit confused that they signed Stevie Johnson today. Because, look, the Steelers are going to have to do two things. They're going to have to do one. I'm surprised it wasn't done today. I would assume J.J. Wilcox is passing his physical. He's a guy who clearly – well, I say this, and then I want to bite my tongue a little bit. You wouldn't expect him to be active this Sunday with, you know, Tuesday being an off day, you know, get Wednesday and Thursday practice. So, if you know, for those who don't know, obviously the Steelers make the move yesterday. Again, a bit of a surprise. What led to this was T.J. Ward – being released by the Denver Broncos, of course, formerly with the Cleveland Browns, an excellent safety. And he goes, you know, he gets cut by Denver, and Tampa decides to sign him to a one-year, $5 million deal, a nice deal for them. Ward, there's some question about what he can do in coverage. You know, again, it's a little bit of the Joe Hayden situation. Obviously, those guys played in the defensive backfield in Cleveland together and with two of the best players, along with Joe Thomas, on that team that never did well. And so, you know, as Ward lost a step, well, you know, he still could be a punishing safety. He goes and plays the defense with Tampa, and that gave them the opportunity to cut Wilcox, who was out of Georgia Southern. He was a third-round pick in 2013, if I remember correctly, Dave. Started 38 games for the Cowboys. So this guy has a lot more experience than Robert Golden or Jordan Dangerfield. Played of course with Tampa last year. Played with Dallas, and then Tampa signed him to a 2-year deal at 2.25, 3.25, or something right along those lines. And he was going to be the guy, but they were able to get some salary relief when they signed T.J. Ward, and he's available to the Steelers. So they bring a guy who has a lot of experience in that secondary. And I would think when they go, if they play dime here going forward, Wilcox will be that third safety on the field, along with, you know, possibly Mike Hilton playing in the slot.
Here's the thing. You go out and get a guy like Wilcox like they did. He's dressing week one. Now, obviously, a lot's going to depend on Mike Mitchell and his health, but it seems like, according to a report this morning, Mitchell was practicing, and I would assume still on track to play in the opener against the Browns. You obviously have Sean Davis back there as well, too. Dangerfield's now been waived injured. Who's going to be your how much time does Wilcox need? But regardless, you can dress him and play him on special teams because Wilcox has a nice special teams background. I'm assuming Golden will be the – it's going to cover your ears, everybody. I'm assuming Robert Golden will be the first one off the bench. God forbid that you should need him in week one. But as soon as J.J. Wilcox gets up to speed – then Robert Golden needs to be feared for his life, because I'm not convinced that Jordan Dangerfield, assuming he has to clear waivers and go to IR, I have a feeling Jordan Dangerfield's going to get a quick ticket. To the street here in a little bit, and thus he'll be able to be re-signed in a few more weeks here. So I think it is, you know, we joke about Robert Golden not being named special teams captain. Hell yeah, you should read something into that, because I don't think Golden's spot is safe maybe past week one here. And, you know, J.J. Wilcox, I think, eventually is going to be your first man off the bench. Now, I got to be honest with you. I've been sick, and I've had a couple of fantasy drafts to do. I have not gotten deep into his tape. I watched his every play that he was associated with, either a tackle or a pass breakup or an interception last year. But, you know, that's 16, 17 plays there that I've seen. Alex has a nice breakdown on him this morning on Steelers Depot. It's not sexy. Okay, I mean, I'll tell you this. He, and this is obviously something you want out of your safeties. He's not afraid to hit you in the mouth. Go back and look at that week one play against the Dallas Cowboys, against Giants and the Cowboys back in, I think, 2015. He hits Odell Beckham over the middle and separates him from the football. And not only did he hurt Odell Beckham Jr., but Wilcox broke his own damn nose on that play. That's how hard he hit him. And don't forget that. Remember a few years ago when Will Allen left and signed with the Dallas Cowboys and opened up the season as their starting safety. Well, Wilcox was the one that eventually ran Will Allen out of town. That's not saying a lot because it's still, what, a 29 or 30-year-old Will Allen at the time. But, I mean, he was supposed to kind of be the heir apparent over there. He's got his flaws. I've still got to go back and look at more of what he's done wrong as opposed to what he's done right. But he is a physical safety. You can move him around. He can play. You see instances on his Cowboys tape where he's played too deep, where he's played single high, where he's played in middle cover three, and you also see him down low in the box and all. So, you know, the Steelers like those safeties that don't necessarily need the free or the strong tag attached to them. But I do think that it is an upgrade over a guy like Robert Golden and really Jordan Dangerfield when you're talking about a number three safety. And you have to applaud Kevin Colbert for going out and recognizing that they needed something there and getting a deal done. Now, it'll be interesting to see what happens with this salary with him and how it affects how they're going to possibly do business with Stephon Tuitt. They could very well take a good portion of his 2017 salary, turn it into a signing bonus, and alleviate a little bit of cap room that way should they need to with Wilcox. But I think you dress this guy right out of the chute. At worst, you dress him as special teams and as your fourth safety, and then you see how quickly he can pick up things and move forward. But this is one of those that really hard not to like the deal when especially you can just throw it on the trash pile after the season's over if you don't like it.
So the Steelers, we'll get to the practice squad on Wednesday because, as we said, some moves are going to be made here, and I don't want to go – we're at an hour right now, and I don't want to go into the practice squad too deeply because I think things are going to change between now and when we do the podcast on Wednesday. But, Dave, the Steelers still have two moves to make. Is this going to be a situation where when Wilcox reports and is officially signed –
No, he's on the roster. He's part of your roster now. They made that corresponding move today.
Which was what?
Well, you remember that you waived Dangerfield. You put Cameron Sutton.
Oh, excuse me. You waived Dangerfield. You put Cam Sutton on the IR, and you signed Stevie Johnson.
Right.
So, to me, the Le'Veon Bell move, it seems to me like it's very clear that it's Dan McCullers. I don't see another guy, unless you're just going to do the handshake with Stevie, say, okay, Stevie, you were going to be inactive for the game on Sunday. We're going to activate Le'Veon Bell on Saturday. We're going to play this game. We're going to Bell's going to be active, and then we'll see where things stand on Monday coming out of the game if anybody's injured or whatever. But you're here this week. You might not be here on game day. So is it Stevie or is it Dan McCullers who goes when Le'Veon Bell gets signed?
Well, it's very minor, but if you waive Dan McCullers, you're going to eat a little bit of dead money if you do that. Not much, but you're going to eat some. But and someone trips off the bus, you might want to have Daniel McCullers ready to dress in the meantime. Man, it's tough, David. I mean, could a guy like Arthur Motes be in jeopardy here? Because I wouldn't think that you're going to sign Stevie just to turn around and cut him before the game even happens, you know? So, it's a good question, David. I mean, you're not going to cut a wide receiver. You're not going to cut a tight end. I don't think you're going to cut Robert Golden this soon. You're not going to cut a running back. You're not going to cut a quarterback. You're not going to cut your kicker or your punter. Matt Filer, I don't think you're going to keep Matt Filer, turn around and wave him. Maybe they would. You save some cap money if you cut Motes. That's all I got to say. I mean, who else could it be if it's not McCullers? And I mean, you're not going to risk Brian Allen to waivers over the weekend, are you?
I don't think so. I think it's McCullers or Stevie.
I just don't understand why you wouldn't wait then. What, you know, why sign Stevie just to turn around a few days later and cut him, you know?
Yeah, that's why I was curious that they did it. I mean, I'm maybe, you know, to give him, to pay him for this week and have him, you know, get his paycheck for the week, because they can't put Stevie on the practice squad. That's the one thing. So Le'Veon Bell has the roster exemption. You keep Stevie around for the week. You do the handshake thing with him and you see how the game, you come out of the game on Monday and move from there. So I would think it's one of those two guys. And you get the extra guy for, you know, extra body for the week in practice. And we'll get into, you know, what Dangerfield I expect to be a member of the Steelers organization either a few days or a week from now, back either on the practice squad or on the 53. That safety position is going to be interesting to watch how this plays out, because you now have three guys who are locked, and in terms of your two starters and Wilcox are locked. You've got the overload at corner now with Brian Allen making the team, and you've got the question mark here with Jordan Dangerfield not on the team and Robert Golden on the team, and Golden not being named special teams captain, which is highly, highly significant in terms of writing on the wall.
I mean, you're not going to dress all 10 linebackers, right? So
nope.
So I mean, you could make an argument. Yes, Stevie could be like that Simpsons animated GIF where the guy walks in the bar, puts his hat on, picks him back up, and walks back right back out the door.
Yeah.
Hey, to me, that's not fair to treat a man that way. But man, I mean, I mean, you look at this roster. Who else could it be? I mean, Stevie. It, to me, it has to be a linebacker that you're going to waive or cut, you know. So how about Kevin Colbert juggling that 54-man roster like a boss?
Yeah, that was some great insight. I know you talked about when it came to you, and this is why, you know, Le'Veon never answered the question about did he sign his tender when he reported on whatever it was Friday or Saturday after the game against Carolina as he said he would. And the Steelers obviously realized they could kind of play a little fast and loose within the rules to kind of manipulate the roster a little bit, which they've done. And now we'll see, you know, how it plays out. They just, you know, raised a lot of questions for the rest of it. I'm sure they have a plan. I'm sure they know what they're going to do. And if you do activate Le'Veon Bell on Saturday, nobody's going to make that move, you know, on that Saturday. We've seen them do this in the past. That's why teams make these moves on Saturday. Nobody makes the move. And, you know, Monday you can get back to business.
Right. And I'm mad at myself that I didn't think. I wrote about that. When was the final cutdown? Saturday. I wrote about Bell possibly being – I got accused of that being clickbait because I said, can Le'Veon Bell be the 54th man on the roster was my post title. And if people read the post, they would know it was an honest, legitimate question. I didn't even have the complete answer. I wasn't even sure if that was – you know, a legal thing to do without getting some sort of an exemption first, you know, with him. But I found it curious because that morning I think Ian Rappaport reported that, you know, he'd passed his physical, but he had still yet to sign his tender. I'm trying to think, why in the hell, why wouldn't he have signed his tender right now? And I started thinking, well, maybe, and I went back to, you know, I had to research all the way back to Walter Jones, I think in 2002 with the Seahawks, when he legitimately just, you know, he... It wasn't that he was on facility. He held out, you know, those first couple of weeks of the season. And I went back and looked at the game book of the Seattle Seahawks' first game that year, 2002, against the Oakland Raiders. And I counted up the men on the roster as 53 and no Walter Jones. And I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe, you know, he came in there and got his physical and they said, hey, we can't find a pin here at the UPMC Rooney Sports Complex. We don't have any pins here whatsoever. and you know, basically they floated him, you know, if you will. And and my question now is, had the Patriots done something like that, David,
I'd be applauding them. I think all that stuff is, it's all within the rules. Manipulate the rules, understand the rules, use them to your advantage.
And that's exactly what they did. Now, they have since, and now this happened with Walter Jones once he decided to sign with, you know, back with the Seahawks back in 2002. They asked for and received, I think it was a two-week roster exemption as well, too. And it makes sense to ask and request something like that from a guy that's been away from your team as long as he has. But even so, I think it's a little bit, because it wasn't like they didn't know Le'Veon Bell wasn't going to be there, you know, to show up in week one, take his physical and all like that. Makes it a little bit different than what Seahawks and Walter Jones went through back in 2002. But it's genius nonetheless. I'm just mad at myself that I didn't think about it before then, so I could have released probably the one and only 54-man roster predictions to go along with this. So, yeah, they have a two-week roster. I mean, I think everybody would be surprised, right, if they don't activate him on Friday or Saturday, you know, ahead of the plane pulling out to go to Cleveland. They're talking about Bell, that is. But brilliant move by the Steelers, because essentially that opened up a roster spot for Cameron Sutton to get held so he can make it to IR there. So a lot of good stuff. I'm going to later on this evening finally dive a little bit deeper into J.J. Wilcox and his tape and all. It'd be fun to watch a team like a Cowboys instead of having to watch teams like San Francisco and Cleveland like I've had to do with these last couple of deals and all as well. Mike Tomlin press conference is on Tuesday. We'll be writing about that on Steelers Depot. David and I will be recapping that on Wednesday for you, and I guess we're going to try to get a beat writer to preview the Browns, not only the game, but the upcoming 2017 Browns. So we'll have a lot of interesting questions for him as well. And you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the cause, please go to SteelersDepot.com and hit that donate button upper right navigational bar. Have a great holiday, everybody. We certainly do appreciate our listenership. David, have a great week.
Yeah, and you too. Happy Labor Day. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.